Thank you so much, Phil, for that introduction. And thank you for the invitation for me to come here. You won't know how much that means to me. I don't know why you invited me, but I can share with you later what this really means to me as I continue. But it's such a joy to be with you and to be reminded of friends that I have here. I always look back with joy at my time with the Metro Chicago team. Rick Richardson was my AD. That was before he became a famous author or writer. I hardly get to see Rick these days. Jim Longren was my regional director. And I really look back at what the Lord did in my own life as part of that family. And today, as I stand before you, I feel reconnected with most of what you've been sharing and been part of. We are reminded this morning that we live in a very wicked world. And Scott has just reminded us that it is also a very complex world. Wicked world, complex world, we can explore other themes. But I've been asked to share this morning about the global God we serve. The global God who is committed to his mission, Missio Dei. In spite of how wicked the world is, and in spite of how complex the world is, we must remember always that God is still in charge of his world. We are told this morning that the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world and all the people that live in it, belong to God. So God has a stake in his world. God hasn't finished yet. God is still mightily at work. And the good news is that God's intention is to demonstrate his manifold wisdom, not only to rulers and powers in this world, but even in the heavenly places through the church. So we are on very good grounds. InterVarsity stands on very good grounds. This God we serve, this morning we are made to understand that Abraham was about 75 when God called him. But I'm sure you do know that most of those who have followed in Abraham's footsteps were mostly young people. This global God, in his mission, in his embrace of the world, specializes, it seems, in using young people, in raising up young, ordinary, simple people, like students, like staff workers, to do exploits in his name. Think of a Joseph, despised by his brothers, 17-year-old perhaps, but God raised him up to preserve a nation in a time of famine. Think of a Moses who would have been killed by the king's decree, but God preserved his life to raise him up as an instrument to lead his people out of the bondage of slavery in Egypt. You can talk of David. When Samuel came to the house of Jesse to anoint the next king of Israel, David wasn't even reckoned with. He was with the sheep. But God overlooked all the likely candidates and appointed young David as the next king of Israel. I can go on and talk about the Nehemiahs, the Esthers, the Deborahs, the Gideons, the Jeremiahs. Jeremiah was told by the Lord, before you were formed in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart and appointed you a prophet to the nations. And I'm sure in the same way that you, most of you here, if not all, have experienced, God continues in the same business of raising up ordinary, sometimes insignificant young people to work exploits in his world. So the words of Paul to the church in Corinth is relevant to us today when he said, brothers, and I believe sisters also, think of what you were when you are called. Not many of you are wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. You know, in InterVarsity, you occupy a very unique position. You are involved in mobilizing the next generation of missionaries to God's world. Some of them are nameless. They are nobodies. They are ordinary, simple students. But you are custodians of the lives of these thousands of young men and women destined to impact God's world. You are uniquely placed to significantly impact the corrupt, the wicked, and the complex world God has called us to. And I suggest to you that particularly as Americans, you are uniquely placed to be involved meaningfully in Missio Dei. You know, when you think about the United States and what America stands for today, one of the things that comes easily to mind is that you are custodians of the best of the world's resources, human and material. And sometimes it's so easy to take this for granted. You know, the gift of life and freedom, the freedom to be without harassment, without intimidation because of views that you hold. Think of many young, innocent people around the world who do not have that benefit. I think of the child soldiers in Liberia, the child laborers in Sierra Leone and other parts of the world. In this nation rests the wealth of the nations. God has made you custodians of resources that, if properly directed, can influence the direction of Missio Dei for the rest of the world. You know, I was reflecting last year that it is only in America that a single individual can donate $1.5 billion to a foundation, as did Joan Kroc, who was the widow of the McDonald founder, Ray Kroc. She gave $1.5 billion to the Salvation Army, January 04. I mean, we have such resources in parts of Africa, but you'll not find people. Some of our leaders will take it into the grave with them rather than share it. You live in a very comfortable zone of the world, if I may call it that. You know, the affluence, not just of the wealth, the affluence of choice. I don't need to remind you of that. You can choose whatever, literally, you want to live with. It's only in this country that I got to hear of a revolutionary way to sleep. Have you heard of the sleep number bed that has a mattress that can be programmed to meet the comfort needs of your body? And if a couple can be programmed in two different ways, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I think I was in high school before I knew what a blanket was. In parts of Africa, a car is an instrument that gets you from point A to B. I was in Guinea-Conakry some years back and rode in a taxi without doors. No doors. There were five of us crammed in the back, and we literally had to hold on to one another not to fall out, as the driver, who also had no door, cruised on the pothole filled roads of the capital city in Conakry. Here you know the kind of vehicles you ride in. But I'm suggesting to you that you have been uniquely blessed with unimaginable resources for the benefit, as Abraham was blessed, for the benefit of all nations of the world. You also have the benefit of the can-do spirit of the average American. You know, the innovation, the creativity. But you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. InterVarsity stands in a position to influence not only this nation, but the character of the church in this nation. Because I suggest to you that the world out there waits for missionaries who are deeply committed and rooted in God's world as it is. One of the struggles I had when I came to this country on sabbatical about a year ago was what, in my perception, are declining values in this nation. And I can share this with you as a member of the family, I hope. I grew up reading about the Great Awakenings, and I was greatly influenced by how God used men like Charles Finney, Jonathan Edwards, and others to shape this nation. So coming in the fall of 2003, with all the news on same-sex marriages, with the uproar against the monument of the Ten Commandments being displayed in a courthouse and the like, when I reflected on the loss of prayer in schools, I was troubled, because I said, if this nation that had such a godly heritage is in decline in any way, what is the impact for the rest of the world out there? And I'll share some of this with us later, because there is significant impact on the rest of the world of what the character of the church in this nation is. And as InterVarsity, you are uniquely placed. As I think of the remedy, I can't think of a better movement than InterVarsity, not only to reach out to reclaim lost grounds, but to redefine the very nature of mission, not only for this nation, but for the rest of the world. But there are signs of hope. Just 2 weeks ago, a friend sent me an email on intolerant tolerance in this country. And I'll read part of it to you. It says, when the University of North Carolina student Timothy Metz, during a literature and diversity class, identified himself as a Christian and said he felt disgusted, not threatened, by homosexual behavior, Professor Crystal was appalled. She sent an email to the class calling Mr. Metz's comments hate speech and saying that a white heterosexual Christian male can feel entitled to make violent heterosexist comments and not feel marked or threatened or vulnerable is what privilege makes possible. Now, the comments were said to have garnered the attention of the U.S. Department of Education, which ruled that Ms. Crystal's email amounted to intentional discrimination and harassment. The agency has promised to protect college students from religious discrimination, but according to David French, president of the Foundation for Individual Rights and in Education, the agency will have its work cut out for it. Then the mail contains information on another case involving InterVarsity Christian Fellowship at Rutgers University. Some of you will be familiar with that, which in September 2002 blamed IVCF, or banned IVCF from meeting on campus because of the group's policy that leaders must adhere to biblical standards and believe in all areas of their lives. Now, the school said the policy amounted to discrimination. FIRE sent a letter to the administration asking it to reverse the decision. When Rutgers refused, it referred the case to the Alliance Defense Fund and filed a lawsuit against the university on behalf of InterVarsity, saying the school violated the group's rights to freedom of expression, religion, and association. 4 months later, in the face of bad publicity, Rutgers relented and ADF dropped the suit. Now, these are signs and glimpses of hope in a context where your very freedom of choice to participate in Missio Dei is being so seriously challenged. But there is no doubt, in spite of this, that you have given some of the best to the rest of the world, and God looks out for this tradition to continue. The pioneer American missionaries who influenced my great-grandmother and my grandmother to commit their lives to Christ left legacies in Nigeria that have continued today. I grew up as a young boy also listening to Stephen Alford on Encounter Ministries, a radio broadcast made available by ELWA then, Eternal Love Winning Africa. And it was listening to Stephen Alford that prepared me for my encounter with a woman from Alabama. You may ask, can anything good come out of Alabama in the 60s? But she led me to Christ, and but for her, I wouldn't be here today. I can go on and tell stories of Americans who have impacted not only my own life, but that of my nation. From InterVarsity, you've given some of your best to the world. Our speaker this morning, Marianne, left a legacy in Latin America. So did the Stewarts, Doug and Marilyn Stewart. Will I talk of Bill McConnell or Scott and Michelle Harris in Gabon or Jeff and Jane Ann in Jeff and Jane Pelt in Oxford, Bob and Debbie Clark in Canada, Dave and Sally, who have worked with us in Zimbabwe for the past 3 years, or Eric Miller or Sid. They are all over. And the challenges, this tradition must continue if we are to be actively and meaningfully involved in effective participation in God's mission around the world. Now, I suggest to you that the challenge before us is not to understand that we've been commanded and commissioned to go to the ends of the earth with the good news, nor is the challenge knowing that the needs are out there. That we very much know. I suggest that today the more pressing need, and which I think we must ask, the question we must ask is, how do we relevantly continue to participate in Missio Dei for maximum impact, not limited impact? How do we continue to embrace and impact God's world in a way that really makes a difference? And I ask this because the world, the context of the world to which God has called us, has changed so significantly that we must re-examine how we are involved in Missio Dei. The way we are involved has serious implications for speeding up the task or slowing it down. Now let me illustrate, which takes me back to the invitation to come here. Last year, during my sabbatical, an old missionary friend called me out of the blues. I didn't even know he was aware I was in the States. He said he had me speaking in Kenya some years back, and he had in mind that any time I was in the States, he'll ask me to come to speak in his church. He told me he was from a church in Minneapolis, 2,000 strong, and he would be glad for me to come over to share with them. I said I was on sabbatical, and I didn't commit myself to preaching on sabbatical. He said, no, you must come. So I said, okay. I didn't get to go. Because he said when he talked with the leadership team in church, they wanted a videotape of somewhere I've spoken, from somewhere I've spoken before. And I didn't have a habit of going around with videos of my speech and so on. So I told him I didn't have any. And I said, well, if it's just to come and fellowship with you, I'll come. Eventually, because he said they really wanted me to speak, I sent an email to our office in Oxford, the International Office of IFES, to send one of the DVDs from the last World Assembly where I spoke to the church, which they did. I also sent a note to Agra in Uganda to send me a clip from a conference we had in Uganda some years back. This was sent. Now, they reviewed all that, and then there were talk of difficulties with putting me on the schedule. Now, the inside story, because I got to know, I asked my brother, what is the issue here? The church was not comfortable with my accent. So I did not get invited. They sent me a check for $100. That check is still uncashed, resting in a folder as a reminder of limited scope of Missio Dei. You see, the church in Minneapolis could go to the ends of Africa. And some of you who have been know our habit in Africa. Prepared or not, when we see you in our midst, we give you the pulpit. Come share with us. We don't even check out your theology. We just give you the space. Because we believe you are part of God's family. When you think about limited scopes of Missio Dei, I mean, it's not just an American thing. I knew a Nigerian church in London. Now, that church was planted in London as a missionary church. But to go into the church, and it's all Nigerian with a sprinkling of few Africans. No English presence in the church, even though they felt called to be a missionary church to England. Worse still, they do not respect the laws of the land or the laws governing charitable organizations in England. But they see themselves as missionaries to England. Another illustration of a limited involvement in Missio Dei. But let me bring us back to Scripture. Because in Acts chapter 10, there's a situation in which somebody who walked with Christ and who was one of his chief spokesmen had to be reconverted. You know the story of Peter. How God told Peter to go to the house of Cornelius to minister the gospel. And you know the vision that Peter had. A menu of unclean things set before him, and the Lord telling him to rise up and eat. And Peter said, "No, Lord, not me. You know, I do not eat unclean things." And you know, the full story, what the Lord told Peter was, "Do not call unclean that which God has made clean." Do you wonder why reconciliation is the heartbeat of the gospel? That if you are going to participate in Missio Dei, the way we view other people, the way we get involved with other people, must be radically influenced by the cross of Christ. Because in our commitment to God's mission worldwide, you know, God is going to link us up with people who are so different from us. God is going to have to break down all barriers and separating walls to make us the kind of people He's called us to be. In His global agenda, God will confront us with people, folks who are so different from us, who will challenge some of our deep-rooted stereotypes and biases. They will run against our grains. They will step on our toes. They will bruise our egos and challenge all kinds of stereotypes we may have. And until we deal with this, we cannot effectively participate in Missio Dei. So it's going to happen. I know this is a very challenging time for us. But you know, what God did with Peter is a continuous experience for all of us. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to step on one another's toes. But the challenge is never to give up. That we don't give up on one another. Because ultimately, God's intention is to displace manifold wisdom of breaking down barriers, all forms of barriers, until the church sets the pace for the rest of the world. Can you understand why the Hutus and Tutsis could not get together in Rwanda? Or why Nigerians of different ethnic biases cannot relate? It takes the cross of Christ to bring people together and make them live in harmony. Now, my wife and I are from very different ethnic backgrounds. And it takes the grace of God to even get us together in the first place. And that grace continues to work in our relationship. But the reason I'm sharing this is, for where the world out there is, there is some emptying that must take place. And as I think of this emptying process, nothing affirms it better than the incarnation. That our global God, in seeking to draw the world to himself, in seeking to embrace the world, demonstrated his commitment to this by first emptying himself. When the Word became flesh to live among us, God gave up. God did not come into this world on his terms. Now, you know, to know how different it was for him to leave heaven to come into this sinful world. Whereas heaven was holy and all light, the world in which to which Jesus came was all darkness. But in becoming flesh, God came down not on his own terms. God came down on the terms of the context he came into, the world he came to. That was why the birth of Jesus was so ordinary in outlook. Consider the choice of location. Nazareth, of which was said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Consider the timing of his birth. It was in the ordinary sequence of life for Joseph and Mary. But Jesus came in that way to identify with us where we were. Consider him as a babe wrapped in those clothes, lying in a manger, motionless, immobilized for a while. God laying aside all his glory, all his might and grandeur to reach out to ordinary people on dusty roads in Nazareth and other places that he traveled. I suggest that the way Jesus became flesh and dwelt among us is the same way God has called us out to embrace the rest of the world. There are significant implications for our participation in God's mission from what we can draw from the incarnation. You know, like Jesus began in Nazareth, no location is too insignificant for God to walk in. No category of people are too insignificant to experience God's saving grace and to be part of the process of leading others into the same saving grace. So you may be wondering, can anything good come out of the little corner of the world you belong to? Can anything good come out of Alabama? Can anything good come out of San Diego, anywhere? Because we serve a global God, he is no respecter of locations. He chooses to raise instruments from the least expected parts of the world to embrace his world. And we are part of that tradition. Mr. Die is a call for us to engage God's world, not on our own terms, but on the terms of the context to which he has sent us. Let me suggest particularly to you that Monsieur Die many times is a call to snail speed. A call to slow down. A call not to cable speed, but snail speed in the real sense of the word. Because when God sends you out to that culture, forget the instant context you've come from. Jesus had to slow down to embrace those he became flesh in their context. One of the challenges facing missionaries is wanting things to happen so instantly, particularly for those who have come from the West. You know, the rest of the world really operates on snail speed. We may have cable speed internet and the like, but you know, the process of conversion, renewal, can never be hot-thinged to this tech ways. There's no way. Renewal, conversion, demands long-suffering and perseverance. And I identify with some of my friends who have served in our context. Because you seek to reach out to people, to work with them, and they never seem to follow you. And you spend 1 year, 2 years, seeking to build people up. But in the way Jesus came, so he has called us out to patiently embrace those he has sent us out to. It is a call to learn to receive and not just to give. And I don't know how else to say this, because you are a nation so blessed with the gift of giving. But you know what? Even when the Bible says it is more blessed to give than to receive, it implies that there is some blessing in receiving. Do you know how many times Jesus was ministered to? Let me illustrate this practically. Some years back, some friends came from the States on a mission trip. And as happens very frequently with airlines, their luggage got lost. And I went to this friend of mine who had no luggage. Can I give you a shot? I said, no, I shouldn't take from you. 2 days, 3 days, his luggage did not come. And I went back with my best shot, which was his size. Please, feel free to use this. And he said, no. We are to give to you, not to take from you. I learned my lesson some years back when we went on a student outreach and we went to this rural community carrying all our packaged food and water, clean water, because we couldn't drink the water they gave us. It was so muddy. It was brownish. And we noticed a coolness in our relationship. And I called one of the leaders in the village. What's going on here? And he said, well, it seems you are too neat for us. You've come with your food, you've come with your water. We give you our very best, and you don't take it. How do you expect us to listen to your message? So we began to take their food and to drink their water, even though it was so different. You know, that relates to what I shared earlier on about this church in Minneapolis. Being willing to give, but not to receive. Being eager to teach, but not to learn from others. It's one of the major obstacles for the Imagine Mission movement today. Because the world is so radically different. Mission is no longer from one direction to the other. Mission is now an enterprise from anywhere to everywhere, and from everywhere to anywhere. And the only way we'll advance is for this to be demonstrated in the way we relate and work together. So learning to give, but also learning to learn from others. And why are these so important? The reason I'm being blunt with some of this is to illustrate, to demonstrate that we live in a very different world. It's a very different world from the world pioneer missionaries went to. I can speak for my context, Africa. The world to which pioneer Western missionaries came was a very open world, because the missionary enterprise then coincided with the spread of Western civilization. So missionaries meant education and schools and hospitals. So the host communities were open and receptive, eager to receive and to embrace. Today, even in Africa, it's a different world out there. It is a questioning world. It is a world that is aware of all that's going on globally. And in some respects, not only for Africa, it is an angry world out there. angry? Yes, angry. Angry at the unilateral invasion of Iraq against world protests. Angry at the imposition of Western values on traditional values. Angry at the constant reminder that the value and the worth of a Westerner's life is far superior than that of a non-Westerner. Even in the recent tsunami crisis, the tragedy, there was an outcry against efforts to reach out and rescue 22 Swedish tourists at the expense of thousands of Asians that are perishing. There was an outcry some years back at how Kenyan victims of the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi were neglected, whereas the Americans were catered for. There was anger in Dar es Salaam when the same happened. So it's an angry world out there, and I think Mike Pierce's book, Why the Rest Hates the West, is a must read for aspiring missionaries. Because as you intend to go out there, you'll be confronted with the realities of this different world. You'll be confronted, for instance, with how U.S. military and political policies have made Missio Dei much more difficult in the Islamic world. You'll be confronted with the realities of burnt churches in Nigeria on account of this conflict between the U.S. and Iraq. Because to the average Muslim in northern Nigeria, it's a holy war. You'll be confronted with the realities of how in the Islamic world, the doors are not as open to Western missionaries, because whatever your convictions are, you are identified with the world superpower that invades regardless of world opinion. And in his book, Mike Pierce suggests that things are so different now that the West needs to listen to where the rest of the world is. According to him, Westerners can no longer act on the bland assumption that their ideas about what constitutes common sense are universal or beyond examination. The implication is that there is the need for a new generation of missionaries, a counterculture brand of missionaries, committed to international justice, committed to reflections of God's grace and mercy on diversities of people without respect for nationalities or creeds. The world out there is also different because it's no longer the pagan world that it was 100 years ago. In different parts of the non-Western world, you have an imagined church that demands to be taken seriously. The ongoing dilemma in the Anglican Church is worth following, in which the African Anglican bishops, in their protest against the ordination of gay bishops, have said to preserve their own values, they would rather not take money from the United States than compromise their integrity. Because for some of them, it isn't just a theological issue. It's a cultural issue. For some, they said, Christianity aside, our traditional values do not tolerate homosexuality. But to now close that with the scriptures and affirm it as part of Christian practice, they will have none of it. So it's a different world out there that aspiring missionaries and the students who are nurturing to go out there must take seriously. What are the implications as we mobilize the younger generation of missionaries? We must be aware. We must prepare them. We must equip them to understand where the rest of the world is, such that when they go out there, they do not go out on American terms, because the image of America has been clouded by all that's going on in the political arena, in the Middle East, and in other ways. So missionaries going out there must go with a different disposition, not with a sense of superior wisdom or the superiority of material wealth, not just being eager to teach without wanting to learn, but missionaries whose lives demonstrate the life of Jesus in identifying with people where they are. And this is why I talk about the emptying process. Laying aside, as it were, or wrapping in those same clothes that wrapped Jesus up as a baby in the manger. Some of our deep-rooted identities that may be relevant out there. Let me illustrate with three major U.S. exports to the rest of the world last year. One is the well-known, this besides the U.S. elections, one is the well-known devastation of the American invasion of Iraq. That's from the political arena. The other is the whole scandal going on in the Episcopal Anglican Church. And the third, from the entertainment industry, by the way, is The Passion, that movie, The Passion. Now, what was the response of the world to these three major exports? To the first, the invasion of Iraq, as you know, it was outrage and condemnation. To the second, going on in the Anglican Church, it was surprise and resistance. To the third, The Passion, the movie. Surprise, surprise. Can anything good come out of Hollywood or the entertainment industry? Would you believe that was what resonated most with where the rest of the world is? Even in the Islamic world, the sufferings of Christ, the pains of Christ, depicted a God that identified with the pains of the world. And they were asking, what manner of man is this? Not Mel Gibson, but Jesus. What manner of man is this? What resonated, what connected, was Jesus becoming flesh, embracing the world the way he did, identifying with the pains of the rest of the world. In a way, American missionaries are God's exports to the rest of the world. And I suggest to you, as we think of this global God who so much loves his world, to send his only son to die in the way that he did, this global God is committed to embracing the rest of his world. But what this world will identify with is not any hint of Western bravado or might, but the simplicity of Christ lived out through those whose lives have been crucified with him. But I believe this group has capacity to send forth those kind of missionaries. The world out there anxiously waits for such missionaries. Let us pray.